So, Marcella, we're going to be talking about the growth of the focusing community and specifically how we have grown to encompass such a broad variety of points of views and perspectives while retaining a sense of common identity.
Thank you, Serge. I think that you've just pointed to an extraordinary achievement, extraordinary both in the sense of, a very high one, and also extraordinary in the sense that it is common, if not utterly normal, for communities of thought to split apart as they develop, which the focusing community has not done. By and large, we have relationship focusing, we have domain focusing, we have whole body focusing, we have biospiritual, we have in the second and third generation of work, beginning of course with Jean Gendlin, but then expanded on and developed and refined and honed in different directions by different thinkers. In the following generations, we've developed, I don't know what to call them, specialties or streams that deserve their own name and use their own jargon and have their own points of view and emphasize their own priorities. And to date, they are all still housed under the big focusing tent. That means a lot to me personally, because as I remember telling you the first time we discussed this, it was novel for me to encounter a community that I wanted to join as wholeheartedly as I wanted to join the focusing community when I came into this work. Because it means so much to me, I am passionate about wanting that community not to split up. And I'm aware from other disciplines, any academic discipline, for example, that it would be normal. And I would be very sorry if that happened. And because it's normal, I want to do what I can to raise a flag for maintaining a large sense of unity.
Yeah, so a sense of gratitude for that unity that has been maintained through the growth, and to absolutely not take it for granted.
That's right.
And that we talk about how other disciplines often fragment at the second or third generation, but if you take psychoanalysis, even in the very first generation, there were these very dramatic breaks and very antagonistic points of view. So there is something for us that people can have very different approaches within the focusing community, but yet the identity of what makes us feel like we're part of one community, makes us able to connect with each other, is so strong that it persists through these differences.
Yes, it persists, which I love that you said we can't take it for granted. I think that we have to commit quite consciously to the attitude and to the effort of maintaining communication across the natural gaps that open up when people learn and practice different jargons. There are risks and opportunities, of course, here. They always come as a matched set. And one of this, there's an overarching risk, which is that we also lose track of what is focusing. Why isn't it an even bigger tent? Why isn't it, active listening, or why isn't it mindfulness, or why isn't it meditation? Because we can either get too zoomed in on my training, which, and frankly, many students don't even realize when they're training that they're training in a particular subdiscipline. And they think that what they're learning is focusing with a capital F. And then they meet somebody who trained in a different subdiscipline and they can't talk to each other. They get confused. So we can get confused by becoming too specific and not knowing it, or we can get confused by painting with such a broad brush that we don't know whether we're talking about focusing or, you know, non-judgmental reflective listening.
Yeah.
So it's a plea for some kind of balanced awareness about what is focusing and what isn't, and how the umbrella of what is focusing can cover a lot.
And as I'm listening to you, I have a sense that in a way, asking the question is already part of the answer. That the way you're asking the question is a sense of having that reflection, that curiosity about what is focusing, and having an opening that it can be more than, say, my immediate experience of it, that it can extend to other things, that it invites that discriminating inquiry into, does this feel like it's the same thing? Is this, you know, that mixture of feels right and logic, which is the exact opposite of, say, asking the question, what is focusing, in the sense of being an enforcer of dogma?
Yes, that's very beautifully put, Serge. Thank you. I live with this question because a couple of years ago, when I realized what was at stake for me personally, because also the focusing world has gone through a number of important transitions, or a major transition with important parts in the last several years, sort of pointing towards a future in which the focusing community is really more run by the second, if not the third generation of focusers. In the context of that transition, I realized what I want, the question came to me, where am I in this? And I realized that if I wanted to live out my desire for the big tent to remain as inclusive as it has been, that I needed to cross train in as many of the different new sort of sub modalities as I could, so that I could articulate the commonalities and translate across jargons. I wrote about this a little bit in some of what I wrote about this is posted on the conference, 2016 Cambridge International Focusing Conference website, because it was an announcement that I wanted to make, and that announcement sort of ended up on the website. In the course of studying different modalities, that's what I'll call them, I'm not sure what the right word even is, I was living with the question, what do these have in common, and is what they have in common focusing? It's not a very easy question to answer, it turns out. And there's an interesting irony even in that. What makes it difficult to answer is one of the things that's magical about focusing, or points to what's magnificent and subtle and complex about focusing. But it also hampers us because we can't, quote unquote, sell it as simply as something that has a clearer definition.
Mm-hmm.
So last fall, I'm happy that our conversation is going in this direction. And then I'm sure we'll tie it back to this bigger notion of community. But I started to think I'm just missing something. There's something I'm just not getting here about how to put my finger on what is focusing. So I had a conversation with Gene Genlin himself. And I smile when I recall this conversation. I reviewed it on a recording just before you and I, Serge, got together for this. Because I'm the daughter of a mathematician. So the way I put it to him was, Gene, can you tell me what are the necessary and sufficient conditions for something to be focusing? And he just hated the question. So we had a lovely conversation about why he hated the question before we could come back to any attempt to answer it. He was almost allergic to, it had that quality of revulsion really, to something that would pin the butterfly on the wall, you know. But after a while, we came to the simplest sentence I've heard him say, or even have read, which I'll quote here. I wrote it down so I would get it right. He said, it's focusing when you're speaking from your body, feeling, and the words are new. Never been heard before. And I said, so it's the newness and the coming from the body. He said, yes, thank you. That's right. And I wanted to like ring a bell. So that helped me, and it also leaves me smiling because even that is so subtle. It's more like a tissue than a sculpture, you know. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But it reminded me of something that you expressed, Serge, beautifully a few minutes ago. He was happy in the end. I was happy because of that sentence. What made him happy in the end was that the nature of our conversation itself was a focusing interaction. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Where he spoke from what he was feeling, which began with his dislike of my vocabulary, and I spoke from my feeling, which was a longing for more clarity, and over the course of our conversation, we met. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And what made him happy was that in the meeting, we had experienced focusing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So I love this whole story as you tell it. And you said, you know, that you met in the conversation. And it reminds me of one of the key things for Gene Genlin is interaction first.
Right.
So when we talk about what is focusing, you know, defining it as a noun, as a thing.
Right.
It's reified.
Right.
And then you start to think about qualities and so on. So that might appeal to the philosopher
right.
in him. But essentially that, you know, the beauty of that story is that in a way it happens not in philosophy, not in the world of noun or essence, but in the experience. And there is a quality of experience that happens in interaction when two people have that feeling of, I'm having the experience of talking from that felt sense.
Right.
And it has a kind of freshness and the other person has a similar experience. And in that way, you've defined it experientially as opposed to, you know, something that's outside.
That's right.
It feels very beautiful.
Thank you for making that so clear. You're going to hear a click for a moment because I want to open the document on which mm-hmm. I wrap that whole conversation, because since there was so much richness in that for me, I want to share another piece of it. Hang on, give me a second to open. Because we went on from the point that I quoted, and I think you'll enjoy that. My computer is struggling to have this open and our conversation at the same time. Give me one second here. Right, so I left off quoting where I said, oh, so it's the newness and the coming from the body. And he said, yes, thank you, that's right. And then he said, and it's spending, let me skip ahead. So would you say, this is me, that if it doesn't come from the body, then it's not focusing? Yes, that's good, he said. And then I said, and if it isn't fresh and now, it's not focusing. Right, he said. And if you're not sharing, paying attention to something you can't say yet until the words come, and then the words that come are a big relief. So I picked up on his word sharing. And I said, even if you're saying it to yourself, you don't have to be saying it to someone else, do you? He said, and yet it helps to say it to someone else. It brings a closeness. It brings a mutual presence. But yes, that's right. You can say it to yourself, and it might be a big relief right there. That's right. So, in me, if you're paying that kind of attention to your body feeling, and the thing that wants to come isn't coming yet, so you don't have the relief yet, right, he said. But that's, you're already focusing, I said. Yes, that's right. Though you are only with the that or the this, and it's not yet in words, and you don't have the relief yet, you are already focusing. So really, it's being with the body feel, that was me. And he said, yes, that's right, but then I'm a little bit in trouble by your limiting it to the way you said it. But yeah, that's right. So I said, let's make it bigger so it doesn't feel limited. What part of what I said made it feel limited to you? And he said, that's right. Now you're getting me to focus. It was priceless to me.
That's beautiful. But, you know, as I'm listening to the exchange, in a way, he's going into it's being with the this or with the that.
Right.
And you're coming back with body. And so a sense of boxing him in, and right. In a way he doesn't want to disown body. But if you keep boxing into the body as opposed to the mind and so on, you go into something else. Yes. And the this or the that is into that little limbo zone.
That's right.
Where all the richness is in.
That's right. So in the course of the conversation, which I haven't quoted all of, he objected when I boxed. And he objected when I used words that were too big, that encompassed things other than focusing. Mm-hmm. So he, too, wanted to find the middle place that was neither boxed nor vague or excessively inclusive. So we were experiencing, and I share this because I'm sure I'm not the only one struggling to find that sweet spot in between. And it was so precious to me that I'm happy that you're giving me a place to share it. It's exactly analogous to our finding as a community the sweet spot in between allowing ourselves to be boxed and limited by the particular jargons that we develop for ourselves on the one hand, and getting so vague and large that we fail to notice when we've crossed over from focusing into something else.
Yeah. But so I want to maybe comment on your use of the word sweet spot.
Mm.
Okay, because it has, you know, for instance, it's a, you know, it has a almost a physical quality to it, as you know, you have a tennis racket, mm-hmm. and there is a place where if you hit the ball, you have the maximum impact. You know, so the sweet spot is something that actually for a tennis racket is very, very specific mm-hmm. and can be pointed out. And in, as we're looking for the sweet spot of what is focusing, we probably miss the point, as in that conversation with Jean, it keeps telling you, you know, this like, this is boxed in.
Right.
And the sweet spot, in my mind, you know, is probably more into the wanting to find the sweet spot than actually there being a specific sweet spot. And so we are, you know, we have that sense of being connected to that intangible quality.
Right.
And we can't really point it out, you know, exactly what it is, but being connected with it is what enables us to kind of find things. And I think when we recognize it in each other, we have a sense of being able to connect with each other that's bigger than whatever differences may be.
That's gorgeous. It's reminding me of other conversations, a conversation in particular that I had with another focuser about this desire that I was having to express, the desire to express the desire about community.
Mm-hmm.
And what came out of that conversation was this sort of beautiful loop about how I was afraid of people saying my way of focusing is the right way, because that is so divisive and limiting. And we laughed together because there is also not a right way of keeping things from coming apart.
Mm-hmm.
There is only that desire to maintain the community and the desire to maintain connection and the desire to keep channels open and the desire to be with you.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
For the desire by a focuser to be with a focuser, which is interaction first,
mm-hmm.
not like, okay, this is how we should do it so that we can, you know, here's the bridge and it's a suspension bridge and it has 1 foot here and 1 foot here and this is how it's built and this is how we do it. No, that's never going to work because it is all interactional and about fresh presence with each
mm-hmm.
other.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so when you say only, that's a kind of, in a way, pointing out to the vulnerability of it.
Right.
And at the same time, that vulnerability is what makes it strength, because it's not rigid.
Yes, that's beautiful. Yeah. So in a sense, my personal decision to keep expanding my knowledge base about what other focuses are doing and how they're talking about it, I can point to that, I can see that, I can write down my notes, I can really almost quantify that. But what's more to the point is living in the desire to be among focusers that way.
Yeah, so absolutely, there's that intentionality, that desire to be among focusers, but you introduce something else. You know, when you mention your desire to open up to other modalities, mm-hmm. you know, and I'm voluntarily avoiding the word you use, which is training, because while it is a training, I think the part that to me that feels very rich is it's a desire to see the world through the other people's eyes and to share a different perspective on experience.
Right.
And so that in a sense, it's not about training in a sense of procedure, but it's about expanding your experience to have the benefit of other perspectives that enrich it.
Right. Yeah, the word training really only comes in because of the logistics, that if I want to go have that conversation, that really boils down to, how do you do this? How do you think mm-hmm. about this? What do you feel? What are your priorities? To have that conversation, you know, the most obvious way is to go sign up for a course with somebody, and that's where the word training comes from. But it really, it boils down to conversation mm-hmm. and listening.
Mm-hmm. And that curiosity, it was very beautiful the way you say it. How do you do this? You know, how do you perceive this? How do you understand this? So there's that very basic curiosity to say, okay, so different people are going to have different perspectives on this. Mm-hmm. And I am curious about what your perspective may be.
Yeah.
And there is something very beautiful about me learning from it.
Right. I'm grateful that you're helping me keep the focus, with a small f, on the interactional and the dynamic and the sort of way of being rather than way of doing aspect of all of this. Because I think it's at the heart of what focusing has to offer the world. And earlier we were discussing a little bit about the ways that the world feels like it's in trouble. Mm-hmm. And I've been thinking hard about what I can offer personally and what focusing can offer as in the large. And I think that our ability to the extent that any one of us is able to be with the other in this fresh and open and vulnerable and strong way, that's really what we have to offer.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And coming back to my original hope that the focusing community itself would not splinter over time, I would say that not only do focusing teachers have the opportunity to bring this skill to people as teachers, but our community has the opportunity to model the way of being with each other that let's say, counters the forces of divisiveness in our world.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So if we ended up with a bunch of teachers, each teaching their particular protocols for focusing, but in the back room saying, I do it right and those other guys do it wrong, we would be teaching while we failed to model.
Yeah, 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 yeah. Yeah. So that we're coming to that sense that attitude, and actually in lots of ways, what we value in the community is what we call that focusing attitude, that way of being, is in a way beyond all of the technical complexities that could be incredibly wonderful in terms of going further and expanding the scope of what we do. But underneath it all is that way of being that we really deeply value.
Yes. And even in terms of the technical intricacies, what a great phrase, I feel very strongly that the many different channels of work that are being done are being done in search of answers to the same questions.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So what fascinates me when I do have conversations with people who ask very different questions as they focus or behave differently as companions or guides or teachers, I'm watching for the goal behind those differences. What questions are being sought out, or what problems are being solved, or what's being explored, and why is that being explored by this approach and then differently by that approach? I think a good example of that is, you know, right there in the very first book, when Jean said, you don't have to believe what comes up, or you don't have to do what, if you hear a voice that says to do something, you don't have to do it, or don't go in, don't fall into it. You know? So the question of how not to be overwhelmed by what comes up, or how not to collapse into it. This is a question that every therapist, every focuser, and every individual is asking themselves all the time, how not to be overwhelmed by our feelings. Mm-hmm. I think that it's fascinating to me to see how different practitioners help themselves and each other to stay in that centered, observing place. This is a whole topic unto itself. It's not our topic for today's conversation, but it's a very powerful example of something desperately important to all of us. You know, that we're not done, and we will never be done, exploring the answers to for ourselves and for each other. How not to get just carried away. How to stay in our largest sort of ground of being, centered place. People have different vocabularies for it. The place, the way, the self from which we can observe in a focusing way. How not to lose that in a intense moment. It's a question that all of us need to answer for ourselves every day. And I think it's an example, you know, how to carry out, it's the simple instruction on, you know, whatever it was, page 7 or something like that, of the first focusing book, is a question we can be asking ourselves forever and coming up with many different, truly helpful answers. And it's how that question gets answered is, in my experience so far, one of the ways that the different modalities seem different. And it's become a real pleasure for me, in hearing more about the different ones, to collect answers. Because in my own life, when I'm at risk of being overwhelmed, if I have 3 or 4 possible ways to not be overwhelmed, I'm better off than if I have only one. So I see this curiosity as not only a way of remaining open when I am with you, but also a way of just harvesting a fantastic bounty of other minds.
So as I'm hearing you, it feels like you're making a very wonderful link between the personal experience and that larger question we were talking about the community and the persistence of the community, that at the level of personal experience, we use focusing in those areas of life where the big questions or even the small questions don't necessarily have a simple one-sided answer. Right. And we find much richer to have a diversity of perspectives, which may actually help us find the right way to be with an issue at a given point. And so that curiosity, that openness that we have individually, is also, if you translate it into something that's the attitude of all of us within a community, something that creates a sense of, in a way, multiple connections of curiosity at many different levels, wanting to hear more about other people. And so naturally, there is a big tent at the level of how it can enrich each person to have that diversity of experience as opposed to narrowing it down.
Right. The desire to live our lives well can seduce us in the direction of looking for the right way.
Mm-hmm.
When instead the desire to live well as individuals can lead us instead to continue to look widely,
mm-hmm.
to harvest and collect, more mm-hmm. tools, more ideas, more ways, more options, more awareness, more a wider appreciation of the many ways forward. I mean, even the word forward sort of can land as a visual,
mm-hmm.
as a unidirectional thing. But forward turns out to be almost a 360-degree
expansion. Yeah. So it's an expansion.
It is an expansion. And that's easy for me personally to I don't know what the right word would be, to be that way or to act that way, I'm not sure which, when I am motivated by what I call happy greed, the sort mm-hmm. of the delight in more. The moments when I have to gather a little bit of courage and a little bit of discipline to stay open are the moments in which the experience of difference carries with it a little flicker of threat.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And that's where we need to use our best skills individually and together and as a community and in the world to talk across what feels in the moment to be a difference or a danger of difference.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And so I think that's a very big part, that we've talked about a sense of being so grateful and not taking for granted, the growth with that sense of unity that has been maintained. But it's also very important, as you're pointing out, that we be aware that in a way it's also impossible to not have moments that would feel threatening, that there would be challenges, that there would be dangers, and that the same way as we've been learning to make room for difficult feelings, that sense of making room for the difficulties and the threats that are inevitable in interaction. And that the same way as we're able to process difficult feelings individually, that there is an ability to process the threats that differences bring. And that it doesn't have to go into divisiveness, but it can be part of a growth process to integrate a larger perspective on the world that comes from that expansion.
Yes, and that's where the challenges are. And this is what's coming for me now, is that this is the connection to the topic of what's going on in our world right now, where we are beyond looking to prevent divisiveness from happening. We are steeped in division, and some of the divisions that we are experiencing now feel unbridgeable.
Mm-hmm. And I want to just highlight, you know, that what we're talking about is what's happening politically, what's happening culturally, what, you know, the that level of discourse. We're we're not abstract.
No.
About very much the news of the past year.
Right, and not just in the United States.
In the world.
Yeah. The sense that there is a wave of conflict sweeping over us. There's something in social psychology called the reasonable person's fallacy, which is that if only you and I can express ourselves clearly enough that we understand each other, then our divisions will either go away or become tolerable.
Mm-hmm.
And that is a fallacy. So the question of how to be with each other in this context, and how can we not only prevent further division, or prevent division at all, which was where we began this conversation with reference to the focusing community, what do we do with when there is already a division? How can we use these skills to do in very difficult contexts what Jean Gendelin and I were able to do in a very friendly, very lovely context, which was begin in different places and meet.
And so what I want to just check is whether what scope we're talking about. And so what I'm hearing and what I'm comfortable with is to say, in a world that is fraught with that level of unbridgeable divisiveness, or certainly apparently unbridgeable, it feels wonderful to have a community like the focusing community where we might be able to address divisiveness in a way that we can come from different places and hear each other.
Right.
I'm not so sure that we are equipped to then make the transition and say, how can we address the world at large? And I think the discussion that we're having is, given what's happening in the world at large, it's even more precious and even more important for our own sanity to have a space where it is possible to address this.
That's very wise. And that's an important reality check. It's also true that I and all of my friends are asking the question, what can I do? And so it's all of my focusing friends are also asking, what can I do as a focuser? New York Metro Focusing is, the planning group is very much involved in the discussion of how can we help promulgate this. I can't really speak for the group, but I want to say, how can we support conversations in which people are helped by each other to listen across difference?
Let me just repeat this.
We're not the only ones.
No, but I want to just repeat a very nice statement. How can we help conversations in which people can listen to each other across the differences? You know, something like that.
Right.
Okay.
And the focusing community isn't the only one. I mean, I'm a member of the Association of Conflict Resolution Professionals of Greater New York, and there's peace builders, and there's restorative justice communities in the legal world. Lots of people are asking themselves, what do I have to bring to the world that can help in this moment? So I think it's absolutely appropriate for focusers as individuals and the focusing community as a community to be asking, what do we have to offer here? That goes very much to the through line of what we've been talking about. How do I stay open and listen to what I didn't already know or to what I might disagree with? How do we as focusers listen to each other in that way? And how does our community, how do we as individuals in our community listen in the world that way and help others, including non-focusers, listen?
And so certainly as you're stating it, it's a question as opposed to an answer. And so that's something that we don't claim to have the answer, but it's important enough that it's worth thinking about it, even if we don't have an answer offhand.
That's true. And we need to do more than think about it, in the sense that we need to be informed by our question and by the thinking we do about that question. We need to be informed in our actions.
So is this a good place to end this, or is there something you would want to add?
Well, I want to thank you, really, first and foremost, not only for giving me this opportunity to speak about what I, the starting point of our original impulse to have this conversation, which was the whole question about what we as focusers have to do to commit to a long-term future for the focusing community in which the different points of view don't split apart. But to go beyond that in both directions, towards the individual, how this plays out in our lives as sole actors in the world, and to the large, in the context of what we can do as focusers in the world, neither one of those expansions to the individual or to the world happened in our first conversation. And I'm moved by the events, the sociopolitical events that have happened since we first started talking about this, and also about my own individual ongoing life experience, to take that topic and expand in both of those directions. It's, it's a lovely opportunity to make the package a bigger gift with a bigger bow. So
what I'm hearing is a sense that, you know, we're talking about interaction, and we cannot ignore the larger world with which we interact. And in a way, how we define ourselves individually or as a group, as focusers, has also to do with how we meet the challenges of the world.
Yes, yes. And whether those challenges are the vast cultural shifts or the pebbles we stumble over in our very individual day, those are the challenges that inform us and change us and inspire us to look for how to move forward in 360 degrees. So this has been lovely for me.
Thank you, Marcella.
This is part of the Focusing Conversations series of the Focusing Institute, hosted by Serge Prengel. All contents are protected by copyright. You can find other such conversations on our website at focusing.org/conversations.